So this is number five, and we've entitled this one, Why We Work. And what we're going to do tonight is, some of you men have a background in athletics and that sort of thing, but particularly baseball, and I know football does it. I'm assuming maybe other sports, team sports, do it as well. But before the first game is ever played, there's this thing called training camp. And from what I understand, one of the things, even though sometimes the players coming to training camp have played that particular sport for years, from their, you know, from early childhood all the way up, we have training camp, and one of the things that goes on, we go back to the basics. If it's football, you go back to blocking and tackling, and you know, just you redrill the basics. For the athletes in the room, did I get that correct? Is there anyone in the room tonight? Maybe I'll just ask it that way. Okay, thank you for that reaction. Well, what we're sort of going to do, this is nothing going to be particularly profound or new, but this, it's a back-to-the-basics sort of thing. I'm going to go back to the basics of why it is we do what we do. And I want to start with a play a little song. Some of you maybe remember this one. I don't have a whole lot of volume on my phone here, but see if you recognize the song. It's actually on your page, so you already know the song. Did anyone grow up watching Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? You want to do a sing-along? We can do the whistling part. And if you remember the film, they sing this song as they go to work, and then after they've dug in their gem mine or diamond mine, whatever it is, Who is it? Gramps or like the grandpa or some? Who's the head dwarf? You don't know your Disney very well, do you? But anyway, he blows the whistle and they sing this song going home. That's a very annoying song, actually, if you want to think about it. But here's
I never do that at work.
Here's my question for you. Whoa! Save the phone. What is the song that would best represent you when you're going to or from work?
What's 16 tons.
16 tons, okay. Why?
Because you're always deeper in debt when you always
get close. 16 tons and deeper in debt, right? Yeah, okay. All right, there's one song, all right.
9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5. That'd be sort of a going to work anthem. Good. What else? I've been working on the railroad. Well, for an old railroader like yourself, that certainly would fit. Yeah, very good. Thank you for cleaning up after yourself. That's very good. So, what song? What would be your theme song going to and from work? Would it be a different song going to work and coming from work?
Probably.
Almost Heaven.
Yeah, okay. Most of these guys wouldn't know this song. Some of them would.
What's that?
Song by Dire Straits, Money for Nothing.
Money for Nothing. I've heard that song, unfortunately. Yeah, don't say the next line to the song. But anyway, what else? What other song would you say?
It's usually not music, it's usually a conference call.
You don't have time for music, you're on a conference call. Well, you're not traveling home from work, you're just taking it with you.
Yeah.
You need to find the mute button to that thing, my friend. Just hit mute button.
I guess those that have retired, which I'm not one of, they can sing that song, Take This Job and Shove It.
I don't even know how to react to that. I don't know how to do that. I thought maybe some people might be singing, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen, you know, as you go home from work. So, okay.
It is well with my soul.
It is well with my soul. Well, there's a good. That's what we probably should be singing. And we ought to be singing some of the words of praise of God's provision and showers of blessings, maybe. That's an old gospel song, that sort of thing. Did you think of one more?
No. I was quizzing Bill to see if he knew another song.
Okay. So, and Bill left us.
He just laughed.
He just laughed. Okay.
I think most people would say, I owe.
I owe. It's off to work I go. Yeah. Well, maybe so. There you go.
As far as appropriate, his eyes on the sparrow.
Yeah, there you go. I know he watches me. Well, very good. Okay. Well, we've had our Disney sing-along already. Let's go to the Word of God, all right? Some of the, at least two of these verses I know you have brought up in reference in our previous sessions. So they're ones that you've already sort of been thinking about. First of all, let's go to 2 Thessalonians. And we're going to chapter 3.
Should we start in verse 7?
Well, I'm trying to pick out where to start.
That's good.
Okay.
You want me to read it?
Hang on just 1 second. Yeah, go ahead. Just pick it up 7, go through 10.
2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 7 through 10. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it. On the contrary, we worked night and day laboring and toiling so that we would not be a burden to any of you. We did this not because we do not have the right to such help, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you to imitate. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule: the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat.
Go ahead and read the next verse too.
We hear that some among you are idle and disruptive. They are not busy. They are busybodies. Such people we urge, command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the food they eat. And as for you, brothers and sisters, never tire of doing what is good.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Make special note to someone who does not obey this instruction. Do not associate with them. That's strong stuff.
It is. It is. There's some question about why this was going on in the church. I've heard it explained this way, but I don't know. Maybe if I dug a little deeper, I'd find it out. Earlier in the book, there was this discussion about the day of the Lord and the man of sin and all that. I shared that with you, I think, 3 weeks ago on Sunday morning in our I Will Come Again series. But there was some thought, the Lord's coming back. We just should, sit on the mountaintop and do nothing. Or it might have just been people just thought, the church is a giving body and providing for the needy among us and so forth. So this is just opportunity to be idle. Or maybe they were just some people that just decided to be idle. But whatever reason, it's worthy enough of a problem in the church that he addresses it directly. He describes it, verse 7, as being disorderly, out of order. That has no place in here. That behavior has to stop. He says, here's our example. He says, for we ourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor and toil night and day. We may not be a burden to you. So that was Paul's example as well. And he goes on to makes this statement in verse 10, and even when we were with you, so this is nothing new, it's just a repetition of what he taught them in person, we command you that if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. So let's think about this. It's born out of a problem, but there is a very positive thing for us to gain from this, and it begins with this: whose needs does work allow us to meet? Easy question, but I want to get it out in the open for us to consider. Okay, particularly in this verse, we're going to think about, that is absolutely true, but I'm going to think about our needs first, and then we'll expand from there. But, if you work, you should eat. You should not eat without having this responsibility. Do you think there is a certain dignity to work and earning what you have? Would you all agree to that? I see several of you shaking your head. You want to maybe just flesh that out a little bit?
Well, I know in my neighborhood, there were three men when I was growing up, fathers, that all ended up with like mental problems because they weren't working at some point. And I saw this like secondhand. And in this generation, it's like, they don't seem to care. And it's changed a lot just in the last 50 years, I think. The work ethic is gone.
Yeah, it's certainly not what it was earlier in our history. And we can bemoan that. We could maybe find ways to address it. Paul's sort of addressing this lack of enthusiasm for work. But for us, there is this connection. Do you remember in your earlier days, most of us have a few miles on us. Do you remember in your early days when maybe your first paycheck or you first got a job that was paying you a steady income? Maybe it wasn't much. We could probably do a contest. What was the least you worked for an hour back in the early days? Anyone? How much?
75 cents
an hour.
He was overpaid.
There's one in every crowd.
He's getting $1.65 now.
Were you happy to have it?
I was fortunate to have it.
Fortunate, yeah.
Because I was still in high school, and the job that I had belonged to the college boys.
Okay. 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 Well, very good.
I guess most work, but there's some people do work that I don't know if it gives you. Gives you maybe money, but I don't know if it, I think there's a lot of work that's not.
I mean, there's obviously there's things that people do to earn money that's illegal. Take that off the show. But there's people who do work that is legal that we may find ethically questionable. Someone that maybe is employed in a gambling, if that's an issue. Someone that works in making pornographic films, I think we'd all say legal, protected, but not exactly an ethical profession that we would condone. And someone that maybe works in an abortion clinic, I would find that very offensive. So I understand that. But I remember as a young man having a summer job, and I remember the first time I got a real paycheck. It had like a stub, and of course then you have the shock of they actually take money out of your paycheck and send off to the government, and you have that kind of a shock. When you're young and single, you have no deductions, so you don't take, so it hits you kind of heavy. But I still remember it was sort of a moment, I earned this. They paid me for what I did. And there was a certain deal of satisfaction in it. In our world today, in fact, someone in the room will know this because I was with them when we did this. Stepped into a particular office, and this office had these like motivational signs on the walls. And there was one, if I recall it correctly, it said, work, eat, sleep, repeat. And I thought, there's a certain routine and repetition to what all of us do. We've been there. That sometimes it feels like that's all we do. We work, eat, sleep, repeat. Work, eat, sleep, repeat. There's a certain routine to it. But if we can connect it back, this is God's way to provide for me, and obviously beyond that, we'll look at that in just a moment. It suddenly just doesn't, it's not just this endless cycle of just the wheel spinning. You can now connect this to something greater. And now this is going to be negative for just a moment. What happens when that dignity and satisfaction of seeing this as God's provision is lost? What's some of the outcomes that you could imagine when that is lost?
We're idle, we drink, we do drugs, we break into outbuildings and steal lawnmowers.
Yeah, sort of what he's talking about here. You're idle, disorderly, not working, busybodies. What'd you say?
I said he's had some experience, I guess.
Wow, this is a tough crowd today. Zach, save me. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing.
I think, guys, we kind of allow our jobs to define who we are a lot more than women do.
I think you're correct.
Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Correct. And I don't know if you've ever been an experience in life where you was without work for a period of time, laid off, between jobs, whatever. Or just switching jobs, it's most men find that rather difficult, especially if it's something not part of their plan, something unplanned. I remember years ago, boss coming and we're having to lay off. I was out of work exactly 2 weeks, and the Lord provided another job, and I was just so thankful. But even that 2 week period of, it was tough. You feel somewhat crushed and not valued, and I don't like this. And in the provision of God, it was actually the Lord opened something better and it continued on.
In our day,
I remember drawing one unemployment check. And I remember being shocked how small that unemployment check was, too. I remember thinking, this can't go on very long because I need to get back to work. That's what I really need to do. Yes, did you want to say something, Bernard?
Yeah, in our day and time, politicians, all of them, we need jobs. We need jobs. So if you find a job and they want to go to work, what do you do? You know, you got to say, like this is, if you don't make an effort, you're not going to. And especially if you got a wife and three kids and you just.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays, taxpayers pay us.
Yeah.
You know, but in this time, even Paul went to work as a tent maker. I don't want a tent maker. That's hard work.
It was labor. Yeah. And one of the things that's novel about the church, and this is where there was a potential for abuse. There wasn't the social safety net, as it's described. There weren't social services. Yeah. There wasn't unemployment insurance. There wasn't Social Security. There wasn't, you know, go on down the list.
WIC program.
Yeah, there wasn't any of those things. So now you have the church as this community that is caring for widows that have no means of support. It's caring for people that are ill and sick. I mean, in some ways, the church was a radical countercultural thing that it was suddenly not just let the strong survive and the weak die. Let's care for people, and there were people who tried to exploit that for their own benefit. Let's go over to 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. That's our verse. We might want to read a little more about that. Yeah, we're going to actually start in verse 3. And again, it's part of what I was just kind of laying the framework there for you. He says, go back to verse 3, honor widows who are really widows. Now, probably in economic terms, women primarily did not work in their own profession, their own career, their own trade. So women would marry early, and the husband would be expected to provide. She'd be a keeper at home. If he dies without any children old enough to support you or no children in the scene, they're just what you were just pretty much locked into a life of poverty. You just didn't have the options. He says, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. The first area of responsibility should be family, helping family. Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And these things command that they be blameless. He said, the church is going to support the widows, the ones that are really widows don't have family. But notice he says they should be living a life of a Christian life. They should be living in a lifestyle that is proper. It wasn't just everyone that's a widow give them money. He says they have some responsibility to be living a life of piety, a life of service, a life of holiness. And then he makes this statement. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, now this is strong stuff, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That has a little sting to it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Now again, this is coming out of a problem, and we're trying to extract a principle from the teaching about a problem. So, 1 Timothy 5:8, whose needs, we talked about self a little bit ago, whose needs does work allow us to meet based on this passage of Scripture? Say it real loud so the people down there can hear.
Family.
Your family, the people that you have family ties to, responsibility to. So for us, you go back to that, there should be some sense of satisfaction and accomplishment that God has provided and so forth, that you can provide for your wife, your family, your children. I know we work in a day where many wives also work to provide for the family. But there's value in that. There's value in that. I know my dad worked in a career, I think he was there about 30 years. And I think I've told you this before, but he worked in a factory, went to work every day, just in a manufacturing facility back when we actually manufactured things in this country. I'm sorry, I'm getting... I'm editorializing a little bit. But for two summers, I worked in that same factory that he was still working in at the time. And I just found that I was thankful for the job, but I realized that I don't want to just, because basically you were just a cog in a machine. You're just repetitive, no thought. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, it was honest work, but it wouldn't want what I'd done for 30 years. And I remember thinking, bless my dad's heart, that he worked for 30 years doing at least what to me was a task I wouldn't want to have done as far as a career. And he did it to raise three sons, take care of his wife, provide for my mom and him in their retirement years, which is still going on. He did a great, great thing for me. He did a great thing for the rest of our family. And it was not always pleasant. It was, in some ways in their world, it was sort of an adversarial situation between management and labor. And there was ugly stuff both ways on occasion. I mean, nothing like violence or anything, but just, there was lots of part that just wasn't a real joyous. No one went in singing "Hi ho, hi ho, it's off to work we go" and whistle a tune. Okay, it was what it was. So, but he uses this phrase: if anyone doesn't provide for his own, It says, first of all, he's denied the faith. How does that work? How does not taking care of your own family make you? I mean, I thought denier of faith is someone that stood up and said, "I no longer believe in Jesus. I reject the gospel. I'm an atheist or whatever. Or I'm now some other religion that doesn't include Christ." And he puts it in that, that sounds pretty serious. That is very serious. But he puts not taking care of your own in that same category. What's the connection?
The pattern for Adam was to dress
the garden.
The plants in the garden, yeah.
Yeah. So, great observation, Eric. And this is kind of where we started in our study. This is part of God's plan all along. It's part of the deal. It's part of what he designed even before the fall. It's part of the faith. It's part of what we believe about God. And if you say, "No, I don't, it's not my responsibility. I don't want to do that." Also add to that, family is part of God's plan. He designed that there be a mother and a father, and from that union there be children and people grow up, ideally, under the tutelage and the mentorship of a mother and a father who are committed to each other for a lifetime. Now, we also understand that's not everyone's upbringing, not everyone's experience, and so forth, but that's how God designed it to work. That's part of the faith. So there's a connection to the reality of God. Then he says, is worse than an unbeliever. How does that work?
We love ourselves. First, we love God, we love ourselves, we love our family, we're to love our neighbor. So if I don't work, and I put the burden for you to pay my bills, I'm not loving you.
Mm.
And eventually, you may get very hostile towards me. We have 58.6 million people in this country that are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big problem.
It is a problem in our country. That's an interesting thought. It's an interesting thought I'd never thought, that it's an unloving thing to impose on the goodness of someone else if you're able and have the ability. And obviously, there's people with disabilities or people with mental handicaps, injury.
It's equivalent to me moving in your house, sleeping in your bed, eating your food, using your water, using your power.
You'd have to cut the grass too, and a few other things.
No, that's worse.
Eventually, you would probably encourage me to leave.
Yes.
Our government does not do that.
Okay.
They just extend the benefits.
Yeah.
Well, you're not even supposed to really hate your enemy. So, if you're not exactly providing for your family, which is far from your enemy, but, it's counterintuitive, really, to not provide for them.
Very true.
How many single mothers are out there?
Bunches.
I don't know. Bunches. Any stats on that?
30 million.
30 million?
It's shocking.
The church does not impress on people that they have to work. That's not a big problem. I'd like to go back 20 years and the welfare department give me the power for 2 days to take a track them.
Right, people.
Take them up and say, if you don't go to work today, you're not going, we're going to take half of your check. go with Mr. Rowe.
Why don't you run for office and we'll vote for you? I'm sorry.
My dad always hooked me up short. He never gave me no slack.
You learned it from your father. That's what work. You learned it from your father to work.
Oh yeah.
And that's and what a gift, you think, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But nowadays these young boys, they don't know better.
Well, and know. Yeah. And what
right across from where I live is the Presbyterian Church. They got two floodlights up on the steeple, you know, that probably 50 people goes there. I know that one of the elders said. I didn't see it, but my neighbor did. A 12-year-old boy took that thing and twisted it enough that he broke both of them off. And the guy went gone. But so why did you do that?
Well, you go back to our previous passage about idleness and the busybodies and all that. Yeah, but for you, Bernard, and many of us around the table, I think could say amen to this. But you know, I'm sure you're thankful. Maybe it didn't seem like it at the time, but a father that taught you the worth of work and expected out of you, and you begin as a young man to realize here's the benefit from this labor. Here's the benefit from this effort.
And it really goes down to there. Me, all you guys, but even my girls were.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we do our children any favors by making them idle by doing everything for them.
No.
And we really don't. If you go back to this, worse than an unbeliever, I thought of this and try this on for size. I'm thinking what he's saying is even unbelievers provide for their family. Even people who don't know God, don't care about God, are living a heathen life, they have enough sense, in other words, enough gumption, whatever, motivation, to provide for their own. And if you don't provide for your own, you're worse than unbelievers. There's unbelievers that are outperforming you, in other words, right, as a believer. And that's a powerful appeal when you think about it from the mouth of the Apostle Paul. In essence, he's saying we should be the top tier of workers, of our ethics, our morality, our enthusiasm, we should be the people that come forward. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, James says, if we know to do good and don't do it, it's sin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, God said in Genesis chapter 3 that we were to work by the sweat of our brow. So that's His will.
I know hang on, you're next. I know a particular employer in just another city, but there was a Christian college nearby, and it was found out that, you know, and it was, you know, working warehouse kind of stuff, loading trucks, kind of, you know, that kind of work. But he loved to hire people from this college, and unbeliever, very rough and raw, but a fellow I know asked him, why do you hire from this Christian university? He said, it's real simple. A, they show up sober. And two, they actually do what I ask them to do. Now, he at that point was not interested in anything about their faith, their religion, their God, but he recognized, hopefully that God would leverage that into a testimony, but with that kind of testimony. You have the floor, my friend.
I was just going to comment on the culture of the time and some of the things that are said in the Bible previously about Samaritans. They were classified as dogs.
Oh,
mm-hmm. And
if they could find a worse animal to put them to, they were
their families.
Yeah.
So basically, what he's saying there to me is that you're worse than a Samaritan.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Great illustration. When Jesus told that story, that was part of the bite to it.
The altruism that Christians sometimes have in terms of trying to work their way to heaven isn't present with an infidel or a non-believer. But even they, in the case of a Samaritan, would be taking care of their own family.
Yeah.
So you're worse than they are.
Yeah.
That's what it spoke to me.
Yeah, that's a great observation, tying that together. Very good.
Matthew Henry has an interesting
thing. Go ahead and share.
He cites the fifth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother, is being broken if you don't take care of
your
family.
Well, yeah, it's one of the Ten Commandments, honor your father. And part of that, if they need something, they need, and you have your, I don't even want to say it this way. If you have the means, help them. If you don't have the means, find the means. Now, do what you have to do to care for your own. I mean, whatever.
I mean,
whatever it takes.
Even if they attempt to kill you, which I bring that up.
Okay.
In Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
Joseph.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
His brothers were...
What a great illustration. His brothers threw him in the pit and tried to, were going to kill him and sell him as a slave.
And then
years later, he provides for the whole family during the famine.
His brothers were fearful when they found out he was...
Good stuff, good stuff.
He was, I've been reading it.
Yeah, I know you've been reading that. Yeah, good stuff.
But I think that's, you know, that's what you're saying. So even if they try to harm you, now a lot of people, even Christian, they wouldn't, I don't think they'd go along with that.
They'd disown and abandon and all
what,
that.
What do you think, Ross?
Yeah, that's possible. I like the verse of, you know, repay your parents and grandparents. I'm going to send that to all my kids and grandkids. Dear grandchildren.
Here's a verse for you.
Different angle I've heard.
Your college was paid by Papa.
Go ahead.
You better be nice to your parents because your kids are watching.
Let's go back to the Old Testament book of Leviticus, third book in the Bible, and 19:10. Last fall, I did a series that many of you were part of on the book of Ruth, and we talked a lot about gleaning and that sort of thing. And if you remember that, I just call that your memory. And by the way, Ruth has a great illustration of this. But here's the commandment in 19:10. And remember, now this is an agricultural society. These were farmers and so forth. And I'm going to read in verse 9. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. Basically, that don't go back over it a second time just to get every scrap. Okay. Well, why not? I raised it. I grew it. It's on my land. That's what God says. 10. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the strangers. And then God adds this, I am the Lord your God. Boom.
Sounds a little bit like Ruth.
It's exactly Ruth. Yeah, the great example.
Well, there you have a portion to the poor and the needy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Democratic concept. We just read the Republican concept. Don't eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Scripture's equal on both directions.
Well, not completely.
Well,
let me finish
all
here.
Right.
Because this is what I love about this, and I wish we could find maybe more contemporary ways to do this. I'm not disagreeing, but don't miss this as well. The person who didn't have land, didn't have standing, was able to take that, but they also had to go in the fields and harvest it like everyone else.
Oh, yeah.
So you were giving them the dignity of work, the dignity of the harvest, the dignity of doing something to provide for their family, and without just saying, okay, here's my sack of grain, you can have half of it, or you can have 40% of it.
It's easier for me to go to Kroger and buy my food than to grow it and pick it and harvest it and can it.
Oh, I'm
sure. That's exhausting.
It is. Mm-hmm. But I love that. And I've thought about, you know, God's method of meeting the needs of the poor, enable those received to participate in the worth of work. And then over on the last page, it's actually the second question. What practical ways can we in our culture help the poor by communicating the worth of work? One of the things is what you've been involved in with our brother doing these raised gardens and giving people a little plot of land and to raise something for themselves. Is that going to be the total solution for their needs? No, but it's a great step. And basically, I'm not sure how it all works, but people who don't have a garden place can come and they can plant. It's theirs. They get the harvest from it.
Well, Tom Tolliver has a heart for God and for his community.
He does.
And that's the reason why I'm involved. He got me involved.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for that particular ministry, it's not being well received by the community.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be able to establish these gardens everywhere, thinking that it's a good thing, similar to the agricultural giants of the biblical age, allowing people to eat.
Yeah.
And he goes as far as to getting the seeds to plant and even planting the seeds. And God provides the plants.
Right.
But he said some of them are so lazy they won't come down and pick the tomatoes.
Wow.
And he says they want you to bring them to them. And which sort of goes towards what Ross was saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
You can
lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, I guess is probably the best saying for this particular issue.
Yeah, I understand. And I just want to say, I want to salute our brother for trying.
He's
and it's a good,
agree.
Yeah, it's a good,
curious.
Tom Collins. You know,
I'd like to meet him. Yeah,
everybody knows him.
I'd like to talk to him about
that. I'll arrange it. I haven't come to your office.
It's even more cool when you start taking seeds out of what you've grown and you plant those seeds instead of going to Southern States and spending $5 for a pack of seeds.
Yeah.
That's the bomb.
Yeah.
That's something for nothing big time.
Well, and as part of what can you do with the grain, you can sell it, you can eat it, you can store it, or you can plant it.
Right.
And God wants us to do all the above with all of the resources he gives us. Now, most of us, it comes in a paycheck or the profits on our investments or the profits from our business, whatever, but that's still the only things you can do with that.
I had an instructor in Batesville, Mississippi several years ago who worked for me, and he taught building trades. And his theme, his credo, if you will, to the students was that, you know, you can give a man a fish, he eat for a day, teach a man a fish, he can eat forever.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me hard because up to that point, I was one of these really left-wing liberals in terms of thinking that people deserve, Scott, behave yourself.
Yeah.
Thinking people deserved a little something, that we shouldn't go through life ignoring the needs of the poor and the needy.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking a different way, and now I'm even thinking even more different way.
Yeah. Well, and
I get the more I...
Yeah, and that's part of what God wants us all to do.
May I read something for him that'll help?
Sure.
This is Leviticus 25. This is why I don't plant a garden every 7 years. It says, but for 6 years, sow your fields, and 6 years, prune your vineyards and gather the crops. But in the seventh year, the land is to have a year of Sabbath rest, a Sabbath of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Do not sow your fields or prune your vineyards. Do not reap what grows of itself or harvest the grapes you tended. The land is to have a year of rest.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the land yielded in the prior years during the Sabbath year will be food for you, yourself, your male, your female servants, your hired worker, your temporary residents, and those among you. Meaning, there's a theory there of setting aside from the 6 years of earnings so you can eat in the year of rest.
How did and they
all,
deserve
it? And all those that are with you, you feed them. Your temporary help, the people that live among you. You know, they had, let me tell you what, when you see some of these really cool root cellars down in Pocahontas County, they're unbelievable. How cool they stay.
Mm. Without any refrigeration.
They're 90-degree weather.
I'm running out of time. I got one more question, but thank you for that. Thank you for that. I want to, because this one I think we need to think about. The under bring it home on the end, or on the back page, first question. How can we ensure that while you provide for yourself, your family, and obviously others as well through work, that you do not become unduly prideful or trusting in self rather than God? Because that's the other extreme. Remember the rich man that Jesus talked about. I've got barns. I've got everything I need. I'm just, look what all I've done. Aren't I special?
What's up for the man for losing his soul?
Maybe that's it. Remember the temporary nature of life, and we have a God before whom we stand. Any other thoughts? Go ahead.
Something I found that works is after you pay the bills, give the rest of it to the Lord, then you'll need him the next time payday comes.
Okay.
I believe a man has to be saved to do this.
Well, sure.
Multi-millionaires, I believe they really have to be saved, Pastor.
Yeah. Well, without the relationship, there's not. Yeah, you don't have anything.
Care.
Yeah. But I think we just need to be. We need to throw this on the table and say for all of us that, you know, pride, as Jesus said, was the condemnation of the devil. And pride is at the root of many things that the devil wants to just snap us in his jaws. And most of us have a few scars in our lives where we've fallen into that trap. I think I can do it. I'm special. I'm whatever. And bingo.
Pride and jealousy, too, the worst.
And I think in some ways, jealousy, greed, some of those things are fueled by pride. There's somehow they're all kind of knitted together. So I just want to throw that, just, you know, yeah, worth the work. We work to provide for ourselves, for our families, and obviously for others, hopefully in appropriate ways. They're going to enable them, teach them to fish rather than give them the fish thing.
Be humble at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Bottom line, we should align ourselves with God's purposes for work. So when you go to work tomorrow, whatever's next, I don't know if I want you whistling hi-ho, hi-ho, but I would encourage you to be thinking, just go back and reattach to that the purposes for which you do what you do. I think that'll be a blessing to you. Okay? All right. Have a great evening, all right?
So you must be a conservative Republican.